Yeehaw! Saddle up and get ready for some cowboy poetry. I'm Suzanne Perez, and welcome to The Range.
Support for The Range comes from Fidelity Bank, Goodwill Industries of Kansas, and listeners like you.
Coming up, the Chinese tile game of Mahjong is having a resurgence as Wichita area women learn what it takes to win a round.
We need three of these, so let's turn him upside down so you'll remember to call him. And then you need a couple of these.
But first, Scott Wiswell grew up riding horses and working cattle before becoming a detective with the Wichita Police Department. He's retired now, and in his spare time, he writes and performs cowboy poetry. KMUW's Dan Dillon talked with the two-time cowboy poetry state champion about the nostalgic pastime.
Tell us, for those who may not know, what is, in your opinion, a cowboy poem?
Well, it's everyone has a different definition of what a cowboy is. You know, some people think of a cowboy as just somebody who works with cows and horses all day long, but others, you know, it's the Western lifestyle. And so cowboy poetry kind of reflects back to the past of the old cattle drives, but also reflects the values and thoughts of modern-day ranching and agriculture.
Did you read some cowboy poetry and you thought, I could do that too, or how did that work?
Well, for me to start writing, that's how I started. I'd read and listened to some famous cowboy poets. And then as you research, you kind of go back in time to the old classics of the early 20th century of Henry Herbert Nibbs and Bruce Cascadden and S. Omar Barker, those old cowboy poets from, you know, the early 20th century. And it just kind of caught my eye.
When I read a cowboy poem, it immediately takes me to maybe a campfire, to an old dusty trail ride or something like that. Is that what you try to do with your cowboy poetry?
I try not to tackle a big issue, you know, like writing about the West or Kansas as a whole, you know, because a poem's like a short snippet of time, like whether it's humorous or serious, like sitting and listening to a veteran tell a war story or, you know, a cop tell a cop story or something like that. It's like that little fly on the wall where you get just a little picture.
Well, we can't let you get away without at least hearing some of these poems. So if you have a couple that you could read for us, we'd sure appreciate it.
Sure. Kind of the first one chronicles what cowboy poetry is, and it goes, I've roped a hippopotamus and kissed a porcupine. I've chugged down molten lava chased with some turpentine. My bull rope is a rattlesnake. My spurs are solid gold. I posed for Western horsemen in their cowboy centerfold. Now I know what you're thinking, that none of this is true. But when it comes to cowboy poetry, what's a feller supposed to do? There's just so many poems you can write about roping cows. So forgive my exaggerations and tall tales that I espouse. But I give this admonition for every cowboy allegory. Be wary of any cowpoke's claim. Now this here is a true story.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hear more of Dan's conversation with Scott Wiswell and more poetry at KMUW.org. The American variant of the Chinese game Mahjong has been gaining popularity over the past couple years, especially with young moms. On this week's Culture Pop, Hugo Fan takes a look at the growing community around the tile-clattering game.
On a Saturday afternoon at Edgemoor Park, a group of senior citizens gather for a beginner's course on American Mahjong. The class is being led by Tracy Keller.
Now, this is a different suit. Do you see that?
Yes.
Developed in China in the 1800s, the game of Mahjong found its way to the U.S. in the 1920s when it was brought over by Standard Oil executive Joseph Babcock.
Babcock adapted the game. He had this great idea. I'm going to sell this in the United States. And so in 1923, he got a patent. And just like Trivial Pursuit was super popular in the 1980s, in 1923, under every Christmas tree was a Mahjong set. And that's how American Mahjong started.
While it fell out of popularity as the 20th century went on, the game started picking up steam over the past decade, especially after the release of Crazy Rich Asians. In the years that followed, more and more Americans showed interest in the game. According to Yelp data, searches for Mahjong clubs are up almost 4,500% since last year. Hallmark even developed its own Mahjong-themed romance film titled All's Fair in Love and Mahjong. During the climax of the film, the love interest gifts the protagonist with a Mahjong set.
It's beautiful.
Consider it an investment in your business expansion.
That set was designed by Wichita's Betsy Farha, Morgan Sandifer, and Anne-Marie Garland. Their company is known as Miss Mahjong. Garland and Farha were extras on the film as well. Here's Garland.
Seeing your tiles on a movie set with all these, you know, actors and actresses like coming around and just and learning the game and being like, wow, I can't wait to go home and teach my daughter this.
Miss Mahjong also designs and sells their own sets. You can find them online or at local retailers like Love of Character, which is where Sandifer's group plays as part of the Green Table Club.
And so Mary, who owns Love of Character, is a good friend of ours. And so we've been a part of that. And that's been a really fun opportunity because we've met a lot of wonderful women that way.
Communities playing American Mahjong have popped up all over town, from places like Botanica to the Candle Club. But what about the traditional game? There are several differences between the versions. The American variant requires a reference card that changes every year, as well as extra tiles.
With the Hong Kong Mahjong, you don't have the jokers that can replace, you know, the other cards or the other tiles that kind of deal to complete the set or to complete your hand.
That's Stanley Chung. Growing up, he would sit on his grandmother's lap while she would decide what was a good hand or a bad hand. For him, it's always been a game about coming together.
When you play with Mahjong, it's always four people. And then that's where the interaction comes about. And of course, a lot of catching up, you know, or maybe talking about, hey, what's going on with life? Or maybe asking questions about some advice and while you're playing.
Regardless of the variant, the appeal of Mahjong is the communities it can create. For The Range, I'm Hugo Fan.
Before we go, a few words on diverse books. As many of you know, I'm a sucker for a good reading challenge. And this summer, an Instagrammer known as Melanated Reader has issued a timely challenge worth considering. Her 1 Million Black Books initiative encourages people to pledge to finish at least one book by a black author this summer. History has shown that spotlighting authors from marginalized groups leads to a greater diversity of reading material, and that's good for everyone. When I was growing up, less than 1% of children's books spotlighted black characters. Children were more likely to encounter a talking truck or dinosaur than a black or Hispanic character. 40 years later, the stats are better, but not much. Expanding our reading gives us insight into other people's experiences, and that builds kindness and empathy. So, one book this summer? I think we can all manage that. Thanks for joining us on The Range. Our producers are Beth Golay and Luann Stevens. Our digital producer is Hugo Fan, and Torin Anderson composed our theme music. The executive producer of The Range is Fletcher Powell. I'm Suzanne Perez, and this is KMUW, NPR for Wichita.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.